we are in Numbers chapter 22. And I think a way of getting back into this. Did we start reading the verses in chapter 22 yet?
Up to 5, I think.
Yeah,
we ended okay. Starting in the middle of 4, so Balak the son of Zippor, who was king of Moab at that time, sent messengers to Balaam the son of Beor at Pethor, which is near the river in the land of the people of Ammon, to call him, saying, "Behold, a people has come out of Egypt. They cover the face of the earth, and they are dwelling opposite me." And then to back up and set the stage for this quite a bit, Balaam apparently is off in Mesopotamia. He is in the territory that would at various points be called Assyria, and that would be Iraq in our day. He is, Balaam means devourer or destroyer, son of Beor. Beor means burn, eat off, or destroy. So devourer, son of destroyer. Names taken to make you afraid of them. And it looks like it was a family business. The being a seer. Balaam is never called in Hebrew a prophet, a Navi, or in Hebrew a seer, a Chose, but rather a Hachosam, which means soothsayer. It's a title which is never used with true prophets. The soothsayer is forbidden in Israel on pain of death, a grievous sin, being that is the mark of a false prophet. It is the antithesis to a prophet, a Navi. He resorts to auguries, just like the heathen soothsayer, for the purpose of obtaining revelations. To explain that somewhat, it was the belief of the pagan nations that such gods as there were force of nature gods. And if they were force of nature gods, things would be revealed in nature. And so you look for the oddity in nature or something that suggests something. This all has to do with believing that the world is bound together by some great unseen force. Is this May 4th yet?
Okay. It's the 9th.
It is a common religion throughout world history, and it is common in our day. It manifests itself in Wicca, the belief that crystals, being an ordered construction of atoms, vibrate with the purpose and intent of the universe. And if you can read the vibrations, you can know what's coming along. Pyramid power, because the pyramid is an ordered geometric shape and may channel the forces of nature. Force of nature gods included Baal, Moloch, Astarte or Ashtoreth, Chemosh, etc., 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 etc. They were understood as being force of nature gods. an odd book to suggest for your reading if you want to get the full pattern of this thinking is one by a science fiction writer, Terry Pratchett, and it's called Small Gods. It's a very odd thing. Part of the belief in this, I learned in high school, way back when, is that the more people believe a certain way, the more psychic energy is exercised on the universe to make something so. Interesting. Which means that the more people you could compel to come into your religion, the more power you had as a nation, because the more powerful your God. So the Babylonians would take and bring the gods of the nations they conquered into their, the panoply of gods. More force of nature gods on your side, the more powerful you are. Balak sends to Balaam with the supposed understanding that Balaam has a harmony with force of nature gods, and so he can influence what happens to Israel by influencing those gods. Bringing this back all the way to Elijah and the prophets of Baal. Elijah and the prophets of Baal gather on Mount Carmel, and Elijah says, "You go first." And so they're dancing around and chanting and shrieking and cutting themselves, and blood's flying everywhere. And they're trying to move the hand of Baal to answer and accept the sacrifice. Elijah simply talks to God. And the contrast is just that sharp. When Elijah flees to the mountain of God, he goes into the cave and he sees and hears the fire, the mighty wind, the earthquake. And God is not in the fire or the mighty wind or the earthquake. And then he hears a King James Version, still small voice. And then he goes out to talk with God. The lesson, very profound. God is not a force of nature God. He is the one who created nature, so he is above it. And how he interacts with the created universe is simply by his word. So he is to be treated in a completely different way from every force of nature God. Balaam does not treat God in that way, but time and time again acts as if the Lord is just one of many force of nature gods. Very, very powerful, but if a force of nature God, then he can be entreated and appeased and persuaded by certain things. And if he is a force of nature God, Balaam will go off and look for auguries. One additional thing to bring up at the beginning of this is that Balaam does not interact with God in the simple word, but instead seeks to find revelation in dreams and visions. God does treat certain of his prophets much more straightforwardly with simply speaking his word to them. But for the heathen, because you were not that much in tune with God, and because a God would be a force of nature God, you don't get to talk straight to. you have to have alternate means of revelation. Consequently, Balaam will say later on, this is the one who has heard from God and seen with his eyes closed. Seen with his eyes closed. The idea is that you have to cut off the normal senses for hearing and seeing in order to see with a second sight. I did yesterday evening check out through Wikipedia a particular movie that is not a wholesome movie, but the title is intriguing. The movie is titled Eyes Wide Shut. Very intriguing title. I looked that up on Wikipedia to find out if there were Jewish directors, writers, et cetera, and the answer is yes, very much. Eyes Wide Shut might be an expression that comes out of this whole understanding of, can you see and hear and understand what God says without shutting off your senses? So that was a long detour. Where were we? Okay.
2:6.
Verse 6, somebody.
Come now, curse this people for me, since they are too mighty for me. Perhaps I shall be able to defeat them and drive them from the land. For I know that he whom you bless is blessed, and he whom you curse is cursed.
Yeah, so Balaam has words of power and can do blessings and curses. So Balak believes. Then comes some very interesting things in the next paragraph. Verse 7. So the elders of Moab and the elders of Midian, there apparently is a combination there, departed with the fees for divination in their hand, and they came to Balaam and gave him Balak's message. This is not a one day's journey. So the people of Israel dwelling there, and they're dwelling there long enough for them to make that journey to the east and back, and to the east and back, as it turns out. Verse 8.
And he said to them, lodge here tonight, and I will bring back word to you as the Lord speaks to me. So the princes of Moab stayed with Balaam.
So Balaam is going to seek out the word of the Lord, and it is the proper name of God, the God of Israel. Why is he turning to him? Well, he's heard that God, the Lord. Well, let me use how the commentaries of Delitzsch phrase it. He seeks out Jehovah. And how does he seek out Jehovah? Dreams and visions? Looking for auguries? Is God going to honor that? The answer is no. God's going to come with his own agenda. Okay? Verse 9. And God came to Balaam and said, who are these men with you? Well, that's more direct than Balaam probably was used to receiving messages. Verse 10.
So Balaam said to God,
Balak, the son of Zippor, king of Moab, has sent to me, saying.
Oh, and by the way, I'm sorry I have influenced you in the wrong direction. I like to say Zippor. It's actually Zippor.
Oh, sorry, Zippor.
But go ahead and say Zippor.
Well, sorry. Zippor. I'll try to get that right.
You're delighting my little teenage puberty boy that still lives inside.
Caleb's son of Zippor, huh?
Yes, Balak, son of Zippor.
Balak.
I'm glad you got such a kick out of it and confirmation.
No, it was before confirmation.
Oh, before confirmation.
Okay. I found it in that Bible when I was in fifth or sixth grade.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, a lot of us found it.
Poor. Never knew the Bible could be quite so interesting, did I?
verse 11, saying, behold, a people has come out of Egypt, and it covers the face of the earth. Now come curse them for me. Perhaps I shall be able to fight against them and drive them out. Verse 12.
God said to Balaam, you shall not go with them. You shall not curse the people, for they are blessed.
Okay, well, that's kind of definite. Disappointing for Balaam because he doesn't get the money.
Yeah, that's his business, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And hey, the king of Moab sent, how much money did he send? Okay, verse 13, so Balaam rose in the morning and said to the princes of Balak, go to your own land for the Lord, Jehovah, has refused to let me go with you. So that's final for that point. Verse 14.
So the princes of Moab rose and went to Balak and said, Balaam refuses to come with us.
Okay, that's two times there and then back. Once again, Balak sent princes more in number and more honorable than these. Verse 16.
They came to Balaam and said, this is what Balak, son of Zippor, says. Do not let anything keep you from coming to me.
Mm-hmm. For I will surely do you great honor, and whatever you say to me, I will do. Come curse this people for me. Verse 18.
But Balaam answered them, even if Balak gave me his palace filled with silver and gold, I could not do anything great or small to go beyond the command of the Lord my God.
Okay.
So here's the first time he's acknowledging
now he's the Lord. Calling him his own God?
No. What's he mean by God? Uh-huh. There's the key. Is God the Lord, the creator of heaven and earth, who is not a force of nature? Or is God the Lord? Is he one of many?
Well, the footnote here in the study Bible says, Lord my God, Balaam's religious convictions are even more mystifying. He acknowledged and obeyed Israel's Lord, but he also persisted in heathen practices. Despite his professed recognition of the true God, he succumbed to his greed and repeatedly sought a way to comply with his royal benefactor's evil request.
Well, the true God is reading something in. He does not say God the Lord is the true God, the only God. Never. I read through and studied through these three chapters, 22, 23, 24, looking for anything of that sort. And there is no recognition of the exclusive claim of God to be the one and only God. But the name of God is a name of power. And there is power to be had. And if he did that to the Egyptians, it's a good idea to try and get on his right side in terms of getting the power. And now to name a few things that happen in our day. Are you familiar with the so-called name it and claim it theology? If you
Joel Osteen
is one of them. There are a bunch of them that if you do certain things and worship God in a certain way, he will bless. What was that that was going around recently that was so-and-so using the name of God called on God to increase his wealth, and God did. So if you use the formula of words that he used, you too can have your wealth increased. And on and on and on it goes.
And pay me the formula, right?
Yeah. I summarize it as using God for fun and profit. And that's not where you want to be. If he is the Lord who created all things, who is not a force of nature, who has his own goals, ideas, mind made up, how he is going to do things, you kneel before him and you see, my plan is just be useful for the kingdom. And there's blessings in that. Be useful for the kingdom.
I think the only way God would answer your prayer like that is if he knew that you were going to give every last bit of it away to further his kingdom.
Right. Yeah.
It's amazing to me how many people share Joel Osteen stuff on Facebook.
Yeah.
Well, it's hard to know if you don't really study where the errors are. You don't really recognize them necessarily.
Well, if you ever listen to him, I never hear him say Jesus, for one thing.
Yeah.
It is very appealing to think that in approaching God in a certain way, you can get profit. Very appealing. Appealing to the wrong part of us, but that's human religion.
To dare to think that they could manipulate the all-powerful God into giving them what they want.
But there's the thing. To Balaam, he's not the all-powerful God.
He's one of many.
Mm-hmm. Force of nature gods is a completely different idea. And that's where Balaam appears to be at. And that's going to be shown over and over and over again in the things that he does.
Oh, right. I know, but I was talking about the name it and claim it thing.
Yeah, well.
It's trying to manipulate. You say he's an all-powerful God and you think you're going to manipulate him into get.
Well, because.
Yeah.
Because in the name it and claim it thing, God exists to serve our purposes. And they do not think of him in the way that we do. Joel Osteen, what does he say? Your best life now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's living in a big mansion and got four or five cars and so on and so on.
Do you want right now to be the best life, period? Mm. No. This better not be the best.
Mm. Yeah, with all the aches and pains we've been talking about this morning.
Right. Okay, so verse 19. So you two, please stay here tonight that I may know what more Jehovah will say to me. Okay, verse 20.
And God came to Balaam at night and said to him, If the men have come to call you, rise, go with them, but only do what I tell you.
There is one of the hints there. God came to Balaam what?
At night.
At night.
At night.
In a dream?
We would assume. Dream or vision. Mm-hmm. Alternate perceptions. Okay. So Balaam rose in the morning and saddled his donkey and went with the princes of Moab. His motivation is wrong. His understanding of God is wrong. His arrogance is wrong. And so verse 22.
Then God's anger was aroused because he went, and the angel of the Lord took his stand in the way as an adversary against him. And he was riding on his donkey, and his two servants were with him.
Mm-hmm. And the donkey saw the angel of the Lord standing in the road with a drawn sword in his hand. And the donkey turned aside out of the road and went into the field, and Balaam struck the donkey to turn her into the road. Okay. So he is, dare I say it, beating his donkey.
No.
Was it a wonky donkey?
Yeah.
Verse 24.
Then the angel of the Lord stood in a narrow path between the vineyards with a wall on either side.
And when the donkey saw the angel of the Lord, she pushed against the wall and pressed Balaam's foot against the wall. So he struck her again. Yeah, I wouldn't say one time hit.
Hmm.
I'd say he beat her again.
Hmm.
Verse 26.
Then the angel of the Lord moved on ahead and stood in a narrow place where there was no room to turn, either to the right or to the left.
When the donkey saw the angel of the Lord, she lay down under Balaam. And Balaam's anger was kindled, and he struck the donkey with his staff. Verse 28.
Then the Lord opened the donkey's mouth, and she said to Balaam, "What have I done to you to make you beat me these three times?"
And then the funniest verse of all. And Balaam said to the donkey, "Because you have made a fool of me, I wish I had a sword in my hand, for then I would kill you." He doesn't even pause to say, what?
The donkey's
talking. Donkey's talking.
<He's> talking.
That is losing your temper. He has completely lost it. And he is so mad that he just doesn't notice that a donkey is talking. Verse 30.
So the donkey said to Balaam, "Am I not your donkey on which you have ridden ever since I became yours? To this day, was I ever disposed to do this to you?" And he said, "No." A little conversation going on there.
Either.
I always talk to my dog, but he never talked back.
How mad would you have to be to not even have a pause if your dog started talking to you? Then the Lord opened the eyes of Balaam, and he saw the angel of the Lord standing in the way with his drawn sword in his hand, and he bowed down and fell on his face. Oh. Verse 32.
And the angel of the Lord said to him, "Why have you struck your donkey these three times? Behold, I have come out to oppose you because your way is perverse before me."
Mm-hmm. Another possible translation, reckless. Yeah.
So, but in his vision or whatever he had, God told him to go
yep.
with the princes. But Is it because his intention is not God's will, but his own?
Yeah, was it like his own subconscious dreaming that, or was that really God saying that
to him? For him to get his money?
Yeah.
I mean, we turn on a dime sometimes. So your intentions might be, okay, God told me I have to go with them. Yeah, okay, money, money, money.
yeah, that's...
So this was kind of a knock on the head to say, this is what I want you to do.
He's going, and that's what God said to do, but he's going in the wrong way. His going is perverse.
Okay.
Means taking something and making it twisted. Pick up on something from Delitzsch in a footnote. In his Jehovah, Balaam worshipped only Elohim, that is, only a divine being, but not the God of Israel, who was first of all revealed to him according to his true essence in the appearance of the angel, and still more clearly in the words he put into his mouth. Balaam did not speak out of his own mind, but by the inspiration of God. Okay. Catching up in this. In the Bible, the false gods are either nothings or demons, powerless towards God's people, but stirring up harm and evil. Balaam, if Balaam had been a true prophet and a faithful servant of Jehovah, he would at once have sent the messengers away and refused their request. So I write in the margin, poser. Again, force of nature gods. Okay, I think we're ready to move on to the next little bit. Now, did we do verse
33? No.
The donkey saw me and turned aside before me these three times. If she had not turned aside for me, surely just now I would have killed you and let her live. Okay, that's how serious it was. Verse 34.
And Balaam said to the angel of the Lord, I have sinned, for I did not know that you stood in the road against me. Now, therefore, it is evil in your sight. I will turn back.
No, I just caught the other quote from Augustine. He was so carried away by his cupidity that he was not terrified by this marvelous miracle, and replied just as if he had been speaking to a man. When God, although he did not change the nature of the ass into that of a rational being, made it give utterance to whatever he pleased for the purpose of restraining his madness. Okay, so verse 35, and the angel of the Lord said to Balaam, go with the men, but speak only the word that I tell you. So Balaam went on with the princes of Balak. And now the whole purpose of this is to take control of whatever Balaam's going to say. And God has, first by the refusal, second by allowing him to go, but giving a caution, and now third by constraining Balaam in what he says, taking control over the prophecy. Now, Balaam can think of the prophecy still as finding things through auguries and oddities in nature. He can do that. But God is going to have complete control over the message.
And Pastor, what is augury?
Augury is looking around to see, well, are certain birds circling in a certain way? Is the cloud pattern a certain way? Is there a pattern in the growth of this tree or this vine?
How do you spell it?
Things? A-U-G-E-R-Y?
Okay. U-R-Y. Okay.
Augury.
Okay. It
can also be looking at animals' entrails.
Yeah. And it's like cut open a sheep and look at the pattern of the intestines.
Okay.
Anything, you know.
And this is something that seers used to do, or soothsayers, or whatever.
In a more modern setting, it would be tea leaves.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And you look for the patterns. You
right.
Reading tea leaves, you swish them around and you let them settle.
And I just never heard the word augury before.
You study patterns that you may find in them, and then you have all kinds of books as to what certain patterns might indicate.
Oh, okay. How about ink blots?
That's different. That's to get at what's in your subconscious.
It's A-U-G-U-R-Y.
U-R-Y. Okay.
Right. Okay.
So, verse 36.
When Balak heard that Balaam was coming, he went out to meet him at the Moabite town on the Arnon border at the edge of his territory.
Yeah, and the Arnon is a stream or river. And Balak said to Balaam, "Did I not send to you to call you? Why did you not come to me? Am I not able to honor you?" And by honoring him, gain what he wants, namely Balaam to speak those words of power. Okay, verse 38.
"Well, I've come to you now," Balaam replied, "but can I say just anything? I must speak only what God puts in my mouth."
Mm-hmm. And so he's being honest with Balak from the beginning on this. Balak has the common understanding that Balaam can speak as he wishes and cause things to happen. Balaam says, "No, that's not the way this is working at this point. Is not words for hire." Then Balaam went with Balak, and they came to Kiriath Huzoth. Okay, verse 40.
"And Balak sacrificed oxen and sheep and sent forth Balaam and for the princes who were with him."
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you sacrifice oxen and sheep and you give the force of life back to force of nature gods so that you can receive something from them. "And in the morning, Balak took Balaam and brought him up to Bamoth Baal. And from there, he saw a fraction of the people."
A fraction. So it was a big group.
Yeah. "And Balaam said to Balak," we're in verse chapter 23 now, "build for me here 7 altars and prepare for me here 7 bulls and 7 rams."
By the way,
so there's going to be an offering, and the offering is of a powerful number, the number 7. And 7 and 7 to call on Jehovah to come and hear and heed and respond. Is that how it works?
Yeah.
No, but in force of nature religions, yeah, that's how you think it works. Yes.
The footnote in here says Bamoth Baal is high places of Baal. Mm-hmm. And I found a picture in your uncle's book of a Canaanite high place. Mm-hmm. So I thought I'd show it. That's a Canaanite high place, and it's like 26 feet by 26 feet circular, and they found all kinds of bones in the area. Mm-hmm. So that's animal bones in the area. So they sacrificed on that.
It's normal to sacrifice on the high places because the gods are up high. And high places were known as places of power.
And they constructed them. It wasn't just like up on a mountain. It was a made altar. It was
up on a mountain and an altar made there.
And an altar made there. Yeah.
Okay. So verse 2.
Balak did as Balaam said, and the two of them offered a bull. Oh, no, I'm sorry. No, that's right. Offered a bull and a ram on each altar.
Okay. And Balaam said to Balak, stand beside your burnt offering, and I will go. Perhaps the Lord will come to meet me, and whatever he shows me, I will tell you. And he went to a bare height. That's a rise with nothing growing on it. So he could have clear view of the surrounding area, and he's looking for signs. Again, it's augury. Is God going to respond in kind? Next verse, verse 4.
And God met Balaam, and Balaam said to him, I have arranged the seven altars, and I have offered on each altar a bull and a ram.
Okay, so we don't know the manner in which God came to him. Dream or vision would be the pattern. And Balaam says, looky, looky, I've arranged these altars in a certain pattern and offered things on them. And so, verse 5.
Then Lord put a word in Balaam's mouth and said, return to Balak, and thus you shall speak.
Okay. So God puts a word in his mouth. He's now doing the prophesying, not Balaam, and sends him back. And he returned to him, and behold, he and the princes of Moab were standing beside his burnt offering. And verse 7.
Then Balaam uttered his oracle. Balak brought me from Aram, the king of Moab, from the eastern mountains. Come, he said, curse Jacob for me. Come, denounce Israel.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And Aram is identified off in the east, Mesopotamia. And this is a setting the setting. But then verse 8. How can I curse whom God has not cursed? How can I denounce whom Yahweh has not denounced? Balak's not going to be happy.
After all that animal bloodshed.
Verse 9.
For from the top of the crags I see him, from the hills I behold him. Behold a people dwelling alone, and not counting itself among the nations.
And those last two lines are tremendously important. The people of Israel are not having the same pattern of life, pattern of gods, pattern of religion, or pattern of anything as the surrounding nations. That's why they dwell alone. That's why they are separated out. That's why they can't be counted among the nations. They are claimed by God. Okay. Who can count the dust of Jacob or number the fourth part of Israel? Let me die the death of the upright and let my end be like his. The first two lines, there are people without number. No, they're not without number just yet. But wait, it is God's plan that the seed of Abraham should be as many as the stars in the sky or as the sand on the seashore. Last two lines, let me die the death of the upright and let my end be like his, which actually does not say anything about eternal life after. Remember, this is Balaam with a very limited understanding of what all is there. And yet he has a prophecy that to die in a relationship with God is being blessed. Verse 11.
And Balak said to Balaam, what have you done to me? I took you to curse my enemies, and behold, you have done nothing but bless them.
Mm-hmm.
Bet he was a bit angry.
Yeah.
You're doing the opposite of what I asked you to do. Dude.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And he answered and said, must I not take care to speak what Jehovah puts in my mouth? But he sees only a portion of Israel. Perhaps if he sees more of them, he will have some way of cursing. Verse 13.
And Balak said to him, please come with me to another place from which you may see them. You shall see only a fraction of them and shall not see them all. Then curse them for me from there.
Okay. So maybe there's an aspect of Israel. Maybe there is an angle on this, and standing in a different place can make a difference. And he took him to the field of Zophim, to the top of Pisgah, and built, notice again, seven altars and offered a bull and a ram on each altar. And now it's Balak that does the building and the offering. Verse 15.
Balaam said to Balak, stay here beside your offering while I meet with him over there.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, now it's his offering. So Balaam's saying like he has no part of this?
No, in the first one he said, stand beside your offering.
Okay.
So it's pretty much a formula. And Yahweh met with Balaam and put a word in his mouth and said, return to Balak and thus shall you speak. Verse 17.
So he went to him and found him standing beside his offering with the princes of Moab. And Balak asked him, what did the Lord say?
Mm-hmm. And Balaam took up his discourse and said, rise, Balak, and hear. Give ear to me, O son of Zippor. This is going to be a bit more pointed than the last one. Verse 19.
God is not a man that he should lie, nor son of man that he should change his mind. Does he speak and then not act? Does he promise and not fulfill?
Ah. Okay. Is he in fact like force of nature gods? He dissuaded, steered, persuaded, controlled. All of that's implied. But he is the Almighty. He is the great I am. Verse 20. Behold, I received a command to bless. He has blessed, and I cannot revoke it. 21.
He has not observed iniquity in Jacob, nor has he seen wickedness in Israel. The Lord his God is with him, and the shout of a king is among them.
That last line is a little bit prophetic, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the Lord their God is with them. How is God with them? Pillar of cloud, pillar of fire. He's been with them for 40 years. And then because that next line is set in parallel, the shout of a king is among them. This is their king. This is not predicting David. This is, first off, God is their king, and secondly, their king will be God himself, and he will be among them. Very prophetic. And then the first two lines, very interesting after 40 years of their behavior. He has not beheld misfortune in Jacob or seen trouble in Israel, iniquity or sin. How can he not see their iniquity and sin?
Hmm. He's covered it over.
Yep, exactly. He covered it over. Covered it over with what?
The blood of his son.
That's a little bit... in anticipation, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
He has covered it over with the blood of the covenant, with the blood of the sacrifice. A couple lines here from the commentary. Balaam went out to look for a manifestation of Jehovah in the significant phenomenon of nature. Heathenism had no sure word of prophecy. And then an interesting one in the footnote, it's what I've been telling you all along. As the gods did not live outside the world or separated from it, but the things of time and space were filled with their essence, it followed as a matter of course that the signs of their presence were sought and seen in all the visible and audible occurrences of nature, whether animate or inanimate. Hence, all the phenomena which affected the senses, either in the elements or in the various creatures, whether sounds or movements, natural productions or events of a mechanical or physical or voluntary or involuntary kind, might serve as the media of revelation. And that is a very good definition and illustration of augury. Catching up with stuff here. They are separate, and as long as they are separate and set apart for God, they cannot be defeated. All of the other mighty kingdoms of the ancient world perish, leave very little trace, but the kingdom of God remains. Okay. To the end of our second oracle, then. Verse 22, someone.
God brings them out of Egypt and is for them like the horns of the wild ox.
Oh, really? Don't get in the way. Now, verse 23, and this is really fascinating. For there is no enchantment against Jacob, no divination against Israel. Now it shall be said of Jacob and Israel, what has God wrought? Former congregation. It was a town where there was a school of witchcraft.
Two congregations ago.
Yeah.
Not Chester.
No. And because of that, we were speaking the word of God and preaching the word of God, and some of the Satanists decided to offer satanic sacrifices at the front of the driveway of the chairman of the congregation.
Oh my.
Should we worry?
worry for them.
What is this? A little freaked out. What does this verse say? There is no enchantment against Jacob, no divination against Israel. And so we laughed. They think they've got any power that can affect us? We laughed. And that is something to keep in mind when or whenever you run into forces of evil. If you have the name
painted
of
God, it all over our house and car.
If you have the name of God, if you are called by God, if you are staying close to him as his people, it cannot touch you. Then verse 24.
The people rise like a lioness. They rouse themselves like a lion that does not rest till he devours his prey and drinks the blood of his victims.
Okay. That goes back to Genesis 49, where Jacob blessed his sons and compared Judah to a lion. And of course, that then points forward, and we talk about Jesus as the lion of the tribe of Judah. Very symbolic. Verse 25, and Balak said to Balaam, do not curse them at all, and do not bless them at all.
But Balaam answered Balak, did I tell you all that? I not tell you all that the Lord says I must do?
Oh.
Sorry, I went ahead. It just seemed like it should go, you know. It's a conversation.
Is he going to learn?
No.
Did Pharaoh learn?
No.
Not until his whole army was sitting by the Red Sea dead. They don't learn. They just don't learn. Get used to it. They don't learn.
Well, it's because he thinks the power is in Balaam somehow, not in God.
Actually, this is not rational thinking. Otherwise, Pharaoh would not have sent his army into the chasm in the middle of the water with their armor on. It's not rational thinking.
No.
It is thinking warped by sin, which is why he's not going to learn. Balak cannot learn because his heart is wrong. His heart is wrong because he is an enemy of God. And he cannot learn. And that's the thing to remember all through human history, that those who belong to God will have enemies, and the enemies will not learn. So then what do we do? It's the epistle from this last Sunday, that by all means I may save some. Part of what confronts us is that we are the people of God, and the enemies of the people of God will perish. And we are called by God to realize that and seek to at least rescue a few out of that. Yeah. So, what does Balak say? And Balak said to Balaam, come now, I will take you to another place. Perhaps it will please God that you may curse them for me from there.
So he's thinking that he can't curse the people because of where he's standing. He's not listening to God's message at all. Nope. Like you said, just twisted thinking.
This is not logical thinking.
No.
Okay. And it's what God said to Balaam on the way. He said, your way is perverse. It is twisted. Okay, verse 28.
So Balak took Balaam to the top of Peor that overlooks the wasteland.
Okay. And Balaam said to Balak, don't you love it? Build for me here 7 altars and prepare for me here 7 bulls and 7 rams. Verse 30.
And Balak did as Balaam had said and offered a bull and a ram on each altar.
Mm-hmm.
How elaborate were these altars? Just a bunch of sticks and stuff to...
This probably is...
Generally, it's stones gathered together to provide a flattish surface on top.
Maybe not as elaborate as that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Along those lines.
And this is going to take a while.
Yeah, that takes time.
And yes, servants or no servants, it's going to take a while. And then go fetch another 7 bulls and 7 rams. It's going to take a while. Meanwhile, how much time is elapsing and Israel's just down there?
Hanging out. Doing their thing.
Yeah. Just quietly being the people of God.
And wasn't Moab a cousin or some kind of relative? Were they related?
Yeah. Yeah.
So these are relatives of Israel trying to curse Israel.
Yeah.
And God told Israel, you can't destroy your relatives.
And right now, for
yeah,
now.
Yes.
For now. You can't destroy them yet. But the third and fourth oracle are coming along in chapter 24. And I'm surprised we got through 2 chapters of this. The best is yet to come on this.